Hello, and thank you for staying tuned to Channels TV, where we are having Health Matters. I am Mary Alale Yusuf. Global COVID-19 infections have passed the 150 million mark. More than 88 million people had recovered as at Friday, April the 30th, and the death toll is over 3 million in Nigeria. In Nigeria, over 3 million globally, but in Nigeria, there were over 165,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19, more than 155,000 recoveries, and 2,063 deaths. We have had 477 new infections, 458 recoveries, and 2 deaths between April the 23rd and 30th. That's 1 week. Recovery rate is 93.9%. Case fatality is about 1.25%. Total samples tested are over 1.9 million, with over 41,000 new tests during the week. The virulence and debilitating tendencies of COVID-19 threw the world into a race for vaccines to build up immunity against it. Now, there are several to choose from, but many are skeptical about safety and efficacy of the vaccines. Yet, the story of vaccines did not start in 2019. The very first vaccine was invented by Edward Jenner in 1796. It was for smallpox. My guest today is a virologist, Professor Oyewale Tomori. He joins us via Zoom from Ibadan, Oyo State. You're welcome to the show, sir.
Good afternoon. How are you, Mary?
Very fine, thank you, sir. Let me start by asking you to tell us, what kind of devastation did smallpox cause, since it was the first disease for which there was an actual vaccine?
Thank you very much. I think the issue of smallpox started way back, way, way back. I think there are also stories about during the Egyptian mummies, in which they found some of the mummies with pox marks on their faces. So it's been something that's been with us in times and generation, but it didn't become, as the world then became what it is in the time, and you mentioned Edward Jenner, it was also causing quite a lot of problems in those times amongst the rich and the lower, everybody. And it was just his observation that people who have been working with milk, who got what we call cowpox, were protected from smallpox. That's how the story of vaccination started. And then he took some of the cowpox, inoculated some people, and found they were protected against smallpox. So millions of people died. But even more, most important is that the smallpox left such a damage to many people's body. You've seen a lot of people who have pox marks on their faces. But they survived the disease, but then they were left damaged for quite a lot of the rest of their life with all those. So smallpox was there. And I think it was a great thing that the world decided they needed to get it out. And it was something known by our people. I mean, go to the traditions of the Yorubas. We talk of Shokpana. Shokpana is a, it was regarded as a god, actually, that inflicted punishment on people. But it was more like, a disease. And our people knew how to deal with it, even at that time. I talked with some traditional healers in those days, way back in the 80s, who told me how they could use what you call clothing materials from people who have the infection, how they would dry those pox in the sun, and then use it like powder and sniff it and protect people. Of course, it wasn't that efficient, but that the issue of
But that's the
vaccination
beginning
started.
of that. That's the beginning of the concept of the vaccine manufacturer, isn't it? Getting a
Yeah, I
bit
mean,
of the causative agent and introducing it to healthy people.
yeah, of course. I mean, of course, unfortunately, we didn't have written down records. So I suspect ours probably came maybe about the same time or even earlier than Edward Jenner. But because we only talk and pass message around, we didn't have dates. I believe that our people were dealing with smallpox even long before Edward Jenner came in.
So, is it not true that now with a vaccine, smallpox has virtually been eradicated?
I mean, it's totally eradicated. Nobody has heard about smallpox since the WHO declared it in 1980. We do have some pox, other pox-like diseases, like monkeypox, for example, which do affect people. They're all in the same family, but it's not the same virus that causes smallpox. But people can also be infected with the monkeypox virus.
Okay, so there's so much argument over the COVID-19 vaccine. So what I want to ask is, with all the vaccines we've been having over the years, over the decades, have we had conspiracy theories surrounding those ones too? For example, DPT vaccine?
Oh, yes, from day one, everybody has had something against vaccines. So it's not just something new. Against yellow fever, against everyone you can imagine, you know, even the ones we give to our children, measles and all that. There was a very big, terrible one against measles, which was said to cause autism in children. So from day one, vaccines have had antagonists, anti-vaxxers. So it's nothing new. I mean, we're not seeing anything new. With COVID, I mean, we've had the story before. So
this is it's all in a day's work to get this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. All right. So
I wanted to say that. Go ahead.
Go ahead, sir. Go ahead.
I wanted to say that, you know, right now, take all the vaccines. They've taken years to make. Take the smallpox vaccines. We're talking of the world of Edward Jenner. And the real vaccine thing didn't come until the 1990s, almost 200 years later. Wow. Similarly with polio. Polio was known in the times of the Egyptian also. But then the vaccine didn't come until the 50s. You know, so many others like that. I think it's a matter of development. As science improved, as situations improved, things were done faster. You remember Zeke and Awolo probably went to Europe in a ship and took them 2 weeks. But Buhari will go to London now in 6 hours. It's development, and the development that's taking place in every aspect also took place in terms of vaccine. So instead of developing vaccines over 200 years, they're now doing it in less than a year. And again,
some people feel yes. It's way too fast, just one
no.
year.
I think.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. You see, I think it's a misconception to say that this was created too fast. The foundation for this was laid years ago. The first vaccine that was produced against this COVID series of viruses, you remember the Markov or something, which came from Middle East. You remember the SARS-CoV-1, which came also from Asia. They have produced vaccine against those Middle East COVID vaccine. But because they did not become pandemics, then every action stopped on it. So when this came and became a global issue, then people just started where they left off from MERS-CoV and SARS-CoV. So it's not as if this was prepared within a year. The foundation was ready there. Vaccines have been made by mRNA, not only against MERS-CoV, not against SARS-CoV, but also against things like West Nile virus, chikungunya virus. But because these diseases are not well known all over the world, so all action just stopped. So we now have one that is causing worldwide epidemic, and they went back to where they stopped. So it's a thorough misconception to say that this vaccine was produced within a year. It is not the day you roof your house. You say that's the entire time you use in building that house. You know, you started with foundation, on to the roof, the wall, and all that. And then you roofed it. So the time you use to roof the vaccine, that'll be your house, is not this time you use in building the house. So I think people should begin to see that. I mean, it's a total and thorough misconception that this thing was produced in such a short time.
Let's come to another problem which we have begun to face, another complaint which we have begun to face in the last few days. People say India is the largest producer of vaccines. Why are they in this problem? I mean, the latest count is like 400,000 new infections. Are their vaccines working for them?
Let me start by one thing. Vaccine is not the total solution for epidemics. It is only an addition. The most important thing about epidemics is to prevent it from spreading. That's what they call prevention is better than cure. The vaccine comes in to add on with all the other things you are putting in to stop it. The first point of this is to prevent the transmission. And that's by wearing your mask and all those other things. So if you don't get that, if you don't get the virus transmission, you don't get disease. And the more of the people that break the law, not wearing and then get the thing transmitted, the more of the virus you have. How many people are we vaccinating? What was the population of India? 1.3 billion. How many are they vaccinated? These are the first questions you ask. And then bear in mind the other factors that might have been responsible for what is happening. We were told that during this period, that there was a huge religious celebration in the Ganges, where 3 million people were there, you know, without masks, without anything. They were a good center for spread of disease. That's number one. Number two, there are a series of political campaigns that are going on in different parts of India. In some of the states, they have population even bigger than Nigeria. So imagine an open door campaign with no regulation and all that kind of thing. So that's the recipe for the establishment of this widespread. And I think there was a relaxation, undue relaxation from both the government and everybody, you know, to say that, oh, we're doing well, we are producing vaccines for everybody, now the cases are not coming. And then the thing hit us, boom, just like we in Nigeria, we don't take time. You know, we're actually giving ourselves a recipe for another wave to come. So the India situation is when you relax on all of the four angles, I mean, the other steps that will lead to prevention. If you stop on this one, vaccines alone cannot solve your problem.
Okay, so let's go to another thing which people find puzzling. They say, okay, I had a vaccine for a pox or one other thing, but I still got the disease. You know, it's fake. Why?
Now, okay, let me tell you one thing. When you get the vaccine, that's not the day you develop immunity. It will take some time. So I get the vaccine today. The immunity may not develop until 10 days to 2 weeks. If I get exposed during the first 10 days, I will still get the disease because my body's immunity is not yet ready to propose that thing. And the fact that you and I get, I mean, I always say one important thing. Vaccination does not translate to always to immunization or to immunity because there are different, we react differently to different things. You may take a drug now and it will be effective for you and I will take it. It is not effective for me. That's a personal relationship. So I get the vaccine and you develop strong immunity. Then you get it and it's the other way. Because of my nature, because of my level of immunity, my level of nutrition, all those factors coming. So there's the human angle to it. So the fact that all of us get vaccinated, that's why you never get what they call conversion, seroconversion 100%. Okay. That is 100 of us are vaccinated. Not all of us will be with seroconvert. Some will still not show. So these are examples. So you may get the vaccine, you know, and you get exposed before your body develops immunity. And remember this one that you need two doses. The first dose only ups your immunity level to a point. When you get the second one, it makes it to the maximum. If in the interval, before you get fully immunized and fully vaccinated and immunized, you get exposed to an agent, then you can still get the disease. It's a matter of the balance of strength. If the amount of virus I get is higher than the immunity I have, of course, the virus will overcome the immunity. If my immunity is much higher than the virus, then the immunity will overcome and then I don't get disease. So that's why vaccine comes in to prevent your infection becoming a disease. So people should begin to realize that vaccine is not an all in all. It is not exposed to prevent you from being exposed. It is not one to prevent you from even getting the infection, but from infection becoming disease. That's what vaccine does. So let's not ascribe to vaccine what it's not supposed to do.
Okay, so it's different from a treatment. Some people also confuse the vaccine with the treatment.
Exactly. You are sick now and they give you a drug to take care of that. Yeah, that's different. The vaccine is before the infection. That's, it is a prevention, not a cure.
Okay, we're going to take a short break right now. When we come back, we'll continue with this very interesting discussion. Please stay with us. Welcome back. It's Health Matters on Channels Television. You can call 0805-468-3514 if you have questions about vaccines. You can also tweet at CTV_MaryA. My guest is Professor Oyewale Tomori. We are talking about immunization. Professor, I want to ask you, you know, people get skeptical, understandably so, because of some of the things we've heard about AstraZeneca, you know, and clots, Johnson & Johnson, all of a sudden, six different cases. These kinds of reactions, were they observed with other vaccines, and were they able to dissociate them from the vaccine itself?
Thank you very much. Like I mentioned earlier on, there's no vaccine that does not have a side effect. If I tell you the story of yellow fever, when it first started, and was given to children in the French-speaking African countries, a lot of the children died of neurological diseases, and that has to be stopped. But then gradually they improved it, and we have, even today with yellow fever vaccine, some people still develop severe side effects. So there's no vaccine or whatever that doesn't have a side effect. Anything you take, water, whatever, can also have that. But I think the focus on this time is unfortunate. There's none of those vaccines that you have given 300 million in such a short time. If you take the yellow fever vaccine that took years to develop, I'm not even sure we have vaccinated up to 300 million people over this last 50 years. So we are concentrating all the work of COVID, unfortunately, and giving it undue attention. But what I mean, let me give a good example. So you vaccinated 6 million people and 320 come down with one disease. It is that way they talk about balance, risk and balance. The benefits, you know, override this. So we did the same for yellow fever. I mean, we did the same for polio. Our children, were all vaccinated with polio. Some of them, polio vaccine, some of them came down, you know, one or two will come down with the disease. But then today we are free of polio because of 1 million people that got the first, three of them got polio, but remaining 1 million, less than three, were protected. So are you going to say because of the three that got it, you will not give to the remaining 1 million? That's what you call balancing and risk. There's nothing you do. One of the ways I used to explain the balance and risk, supposing somebody, God forbid, somebody has an accident right now, and you need to take that person to the hospital. Is this either the car that you're using getting the accident that you will use or take him to the hospital, or another car? You're not going to say, because he got accident with that car, I'm going to carry him on my head to the hospital. He will die before you get to the hospital. So those are some of the things people should look at. There will be risk. But then are the risks less than the benefits? And that's what you look at. And that's what the situation is. So yeah, I especially anything that causes a problem, people should be genuinely concerned about it. But rather than panic, it is give information to the people, full-time information, and a proper balance the situation. And you got this thing. They take our country. We vote for one party or the other because we assume one party will do better than the other. But they come in and sometimes they do worse than that. It's a risk, it's a gamble we take. But we have to take a balance. We cannot vote instead to vote for somebody, you know, in the hope that that person will do. So you look at the risk of not voting for this party. You look at the benefit of voting for that party. And you vote for your party that you like. You're not going to abstain from voting. So also okay. With vaccine.
Let me quickly jump in there and ask you. We need 70% coverage for herd immunity. So here's the question. If 70 people are vaccinated, what happens to the 30? The 30 that are not vaccinated, can they get the disease or are they covered or must something special be done?
Good. Let me explain what herd immunity means. So herd immunity means there are 10 of us in this room and 8 of us have been vaccinated. If somebody with COVID comes sneezing in that room, but because there are 10 of us around this, I mean, 8 of us around this guy, the only two that are protected, the chances of that man sneezing getting to the two is very slim. I'm not saying he won't get it, but it is very slim because the likelihood is that he's going to hit one of those 8 that are already protected. And if that's the situation, then there's no disease. That's what herd immunity does. Herd immunity means that in the 10 of us that are here, a good example would be when you take mosquito, for example, that carries yellow fever. If 8 of us in this room are vaccinated and 2 are not, if a mosquito flies in, there's a greater chance that it's going to bite one of the 8 of us rather than one of the 2.
Okay.
So in a way, it protects the 2. That's what it comes about. But herd immunity is not static. It is because if more people come into that room who are not vaccinated, then it means we're diluting the herd immunity. And so that's the situation why we continue to give vaccination to people. So if other people then come in who are not protected, then you're diluting your herd immunity and exposing more people to infection.
Okay, using your analogy of the 8 and the 2 and the dilution of herd immunity, with all this talk about vaccine passports, let's say those two want to travel. Will they be denied? And would it be a right thing to deny them travel because they didn't get the vaccine?
You see, in the world of equity, it will not be right. That is, assuming that the vaccines are all available to all of us, and I can go and get it anytime without any obstacle. We do that for yellow fever, don't we? Because the vaccines are available everywhere. And the rule is that for your sake and for the sake of the country you are going to, we don't want you. So your right is one thing. What are the rights of the millions of other people in another country that you are carrying the disease to? So you have to, again, it's a matter of balance and risk. Your right versus the right of all the rest of Nigerians. So there has to be a balance. So if the vaccines were available to all of us, and that's why talking about what you call vaccine passport, which I think is the wrong analogy, title to call it, who had yellow fever card, we should be calling it COVID card, not passport. But that's a different story. But if all the vaccine was available like it is now, that is not now, and then everybody has the chance, then of course, if the rule says, if you're not vaccinated, you cannot go, I don't see what is wrong with in that one. But unfortunately, we're dealing with a situation where 90% of the people in Africa are not getting the vaccine. Therefore, it would be premature, it would be unfair, it would be inequitable to introduce a vaccine passport before I go to Europe or other things. But when the world now has all of the vaccine, everybody has a chance to get it, it becomes tenable if you don't want to keep spreading the disease all over the world. Like I said, we do it for yellow fever. So why can't we do it for this one?
Are there people, though, who cannot, should not get a vaccine? I'm not talking about just COVID now, any vaccine. Because of their health status, are there some people who shouldn't take a vaccine? And how do they find such people? How do they identify them if they do exist?
You're right. There are certain people who, you know, it is for them, taking that vaccine will cause more problems. Again, this is where we're talking about risk and benefit. What's the risk of my dying by taking this vaccine as compared to if I don't take it, I'd still be alive? I mentioned the situation with yellow fever. A lot of the people, travelers coming to Africa, you know, who have never been exposed to yellow fever before, and they are in their 60s and 70s, they now get the vaccine, and the vaccine ends up killing them. So the doctor who is going to give that has to lay all this emphasis down. You have never been to Africa. We don't know how this vaccine would do for you. Must you go to Africa? If you must go to Africa, you must take the vaccine. If you don't have to go to Africa, you don't have to take the vaccine. So you leave the choice for the individual. Unfortunately, sometimes we wouldn't know. There are some diseases where if you have, you know, you have it already. It is not indicated for you to take those virus. On that basis, you have pre-knowledge about that disease. But many of us don't even know what we have. And unfortunately, it is when we take the vaccine that all these problems start. Take the issue of the clotting they're talking about. It's not everybody that gets clot. Some people will take fertility pills or whatever, and then get clots in their body. So all these are things that people develop. And that's why vaccines, what you call phase 4 pharmacovigilance, is the visit. When we do clinical trials, you are excluding some people. You say, no, you are not included if you have this, if you don't have that. But when we make it a mass campaign, there's no more exclusion or inclusion. That's when we get more about the vaccine. So the fact that during the clinical trials, they did not find clots, Oxford said, that's because the group they did it, they didn't have that one. Now it is open to everybody. There's no restriction. All of us can go and get it. And those who have those problems, we now come up with the side effects, which we don't like. That's where it continues thing about science and research. You remember what happened with South Africa when they tested the Oxford vaccine against the South African variant? What happened? It didn't work. But what did they do? They didn't just fold their hands and start shouting. They now went back into the lab to see how they can produce another vaccine against the variant from South Africa. That's what science and technology comes about. That's what you look forward to. And that's the problem we have in our region where we're not following research and science.
Thank you so much, Professor Tomori. We could go on and on talking about these things, but we've run out of time. Thank you so much for being our guest and coming on Health Matters.
It was my pleasure, Mary. Thank you for having me.
And thank you, viewers, for being there. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I am Mary Alaleyusu.